Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Dan Kroll.
I need you to tell me exactly where Newcastle under Lyme, Staffordshire, because there's an over and there's an under. So is under bad?
Does
that make you feel insecure to be from an under place?
Not at all. It's a great, it's a lovely place. Newcastle upon Tyne, that's way up north. I'm further south. Newcastle under Lyme is in Stoke-on-Trent, and that's where I was born. Newcastle is, it's like an hour south of Liverpool, not south, southeast. And so it's kind of mid UK really, towards the kind of Welsh kind of coast.
Sports career, broken leg, led you to that lovely school in Liverpool where you had a audience with McCartney. See, we've got, that's the other stuff that we don't need to go down these because this is all wonderful and lovely, but I want to get into the music.
I think what, like aside from when people ask me all about the influences and you have to go through all of the people that your mum and dad played around the house and stuff, I think for me what really, when you kind of get down to the bare bones of it, what got me into music was my nan is a big inspiration for me. She just turned 87 the other day. And in Liverpool, where I was kind of brought up every weekend, she's a great singer. She sings at church and everything like that, probably horrendously out of tune when she's not got her hearing aids on. But she's an absolute character, and she grew up in such a hard time, in a hard place in Liverpool during the war. And there's this thing of the whole, all the war songs and all of the songs that people would sing in the pub together to get their spirits high and stuff like that. And think those songs that she sang at every family get-together, we'd all give her a few whiskies and she'd be singing in no time. And I think those kind of like, where you don't need any music, you just sit back and you listen to someone telling this story of, you know, of war and of growing up and funny sides to it in a weird way. And for me, like hearing that as a kid was just like, wow, this is like storytelling. This is incredible. And so I think, you know, aside from the obvious influences and stuff, she influenced me with these songs that probably no one's really heard, just the local Liverpool community.
You could call yourself, there's so many names that we could come up with, an electronic folk singer or a folk singing electronicist, or we could come up with a lot of great names, none of which I care about. What I care about is that when I listen to this, they all build, they all crescendo, they all get to an anthemic moment. Putting this together, you deliberately went out of your way to just write what you wrote and didn't go out of your way to say, well, you know, this is going to be folky and this is going to be more loud and this is going to require the full band on stage. You didn't sit there and predetermine any of this. And I think it's important to get that out there.
Yeah, I think you're dead on there. For me, it's a big pet hate when I listen to an album that I can tell has been tuned to radio edits. It's all been done in one studio, a very glamorous, posh, expensive studio. It's all had some great guy mixing it, and it's the same. And you find these tracks that you skip over because I call them personally fillers, where you've got the singles that did well, and then you've just got tracks that you just skip over. They tend to sound the same because the album has a theme, and a theme can be a massive downfall to an artist or a band because you feel you've got to stick to it, and then before you know it, you've created an album that has got one storyline, it's got one theme, one sound, one studio, one mixer. I think for me, this album was all about creating a mixtape, and it's about, in a non, I don't know, it's me, and for me, it was all about making a mixtape. It's all about showcasing where I've been over the past 4 or 5 years since I feel I've professionally started songwriting. And I started out very folky, and so there are songs on there like Home and Sweet Disarray that are just very stripped back, and then there's songs that a year later I'd just been introduced to someone like Fela Kuti, and so they're really kind of African, Afrobeat,
yes.
And the rhythm comes, and then there's songs where I've just a year later or a couple of months later I've been introduced to Midnight Marauders by a tribe called Quest, and I've started sampling. This is what it's all about for me, and there was no pressure in any way to start thinking, oh, I've got to tie these all together, I've got to make them into this theme and stuff. This was purely just for me in a way. It's, I know it sounds very greedy, but it was in a way, and that's why you do it.
But the best recordings are about the artist and not about the artist trying to satisfy an audience.
Yes, if it satisfies an audience, which thankfully it has been doing, yes. it's a great bonus. And I obviously do write these songs, you know, songs like Sweet Disarray, which touches on kind of dementia, which is what I'm going through with family at the moment. It's such a tender subject, and something that people feel they may not be able to talk about. And I've had a lot of people come up and contact me and talk, you know, open up about their dealings with family members having dementia. And that is also what it's all about. It is like, you know, connecting with those people in specific ways, not just because it's got the latest synth on, not because it's got kick drums on every beat at the bar and stuff.
Okay, there's pop over here and there's guitar rock over here. And then there is based on the songwriter, the vocals, and the instrumentation. And you would think that that's like master of the obvious, except that pop over here is not that, and guitar rock is not that. But you're right there with some of the artists that you have been with, in that what you're all concentrating on is it's back to the songs.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And it's not just been now in which I've been in this place. I think for the past few years, I've been part of these songwriters that, like, I was, you know, 5 years ago, that, like, you touched on Communion earlier. When Communion invited me to work with them, I was like alongside artists like Michael Kiwanuka, who I was loving. He was bringing back some really cool sounds, and he was taking it back to the instrumentation. And like, I was watching him live, and there was just one guy dedicated to percussion, and I was thinking, whoa, this isn't just your standard guitar, drums, bass, keys, vocal. It was, you know, I think over the past few years I've been developing with these people as well. People, you know, like you say, London Grammar as well, and churches and stuff like that. It's been an exciting time to be in the industry.
But you are a multi-instrumentalist, and from what I know, drums is number one, bass is number two, and then the synths kind of found their way in, right?
Yeah, drums for me are something key. I feel I personally can't move on with a track unless it's got a strong foundation, a strong drum. There's no point in building on it if it's not strong underneath, you know, it's song architecture.
Was there an overall producer mixer who then, when you created all this, then, I mean, I know I'm asking you a rhetorical question because I know there was. Let's go back to Sweet Disarray. Just the reverb on there, just the way that it's as deep as it is, that feels like what the song is about. And I think that's intentional. And that's why, so tell me a little bit about that.
There was one mixer and producer,
yes.
But he's just as scatty as me. And that was the cool thing. And that's why, like, we met at university, and we lived together for 5 years.
He was pretty young.
Yeah, we're both now 23, and we both started uni together. We met, best mates, lived together for 4 years, been developing together. So we've created some terrible songs. We've created some terrible mixes, terrible produced records, but we've learned together, and we've come such a long way together, Joe and I. And that's the thing, Joe's been with me since the very start, and so he understands. And, you know, I suppose on the back of this it says mixed by Joe Wills, produced by Joe Wills, songs written by Dan Crowe, but those blur when it comes down to being in the studio together. We work on a song by song basis. We both don't think about the overall sound. It's, we work just simultaneously, you know. It's, we experiment a lot, you know.
You share something with a fellow great songwriter, that being Paul Simon, and that would be Ladysmith Black Mambazo. And there's a lot in common there about the rhythms, about the way melody then interconnects with all these beats.
Yeah, but for me with Ladysmith Black Mambazo, it's the way that they're able to do that purely a cappella. When I heard Ladysmith for the first time, it was like, you know, obviously great vocals, great sound, and like velvety voices so deep that you don't really hear in the UK, because there's something about the kind of African and South African sound to the vocals. But it was the way in which they were almost creating a beat and percussion through vocals. And on a track that I worked with them, where I reworked Hello My Baby, the way in which they like kind of do these grunts and clicks and stuff like that, it just, for me, usually my songs are about the beat and the groove, and that's what drew me to Ladysmith, how they're able to do it so minimally in a way.
So let's talk about this. I like going to down the evil road a little bit. Let's talk about the hype. How have you thought about how to keep it pure and how to make sure that what you're doing doesn't get lost in the quote machine?
Now, this is, I think, the special thing about my position. I didn't start on a major label, but during these past 4 years, I've been developed by a subsidiary of this major label, and that is now my management, which is called Turn First Records. And I owe Turn First a huge amount. They started coming into it with Communion, so they've been there since the very start. They've kept that organic feel of the Communion independent label, and they've developed me and they've allowed me bit by bit to lend me money and me to recoup. And it's by no means being suddenly one day I've signed this major label deal. It's not been that at all. This has been developed over 2 or 3 years, and so I think it makes it very special that it's kept everything so. There's no pressure on my back.
I was watching the Jimmy Kimmel performance, and when you're playing a big thing like that, and it's all hyped up, and it's LA, and it's a big television show, do you think this is what I want to do, or do you think I'm going to make sure that everybody understands that as I move forward, I know this is part of what I have to do. However, this is not what I'm in it for.
It was scary. It was really scary. In no means was it bright lights and like, oh, we're playing it. It was scary stuff. And not only for me, but I travel with 4 of my best mates who've been in my band for the past 5 or 6 years. We've also developed together. And it was just like, there's no way of getting carried away for us. These guys keep me incredibly grounded. We keep each other grounded. And so it's just like coming over here, we're so incredibly grateful. And it's quite incredible to just take it in show by show, drive by drive. There's no hype within the team or anything like that. We're all very, yeah, it was an incredible thing to play Jimmy Kimmel. Incredibly scary, you know, and I know a lot of stuff comes from that, like, oh, they played Jimmy Kimmel. It's like, yeah, it wasn't a perfect performance, you know, we're very critical and, you know, we're still developing. I'm still developing. So I can't wait to now go on to the next one purely to kind of better myself.
So I'm just going to pick one song because as I wrote this, I started laughing. And the way I wrote it, I'm like, I'm not going to change this. But I wrote about From Nowhere that I know it's about a party girl, but really an organ played a bigger role in the long run, did it not?
Yeah, it really did. eBay, that's where I pretty much get every one of my instruments, purely because of that feature where you can find the nearest one to you. And I was just searching kind of vintage organs and had a rough knowledge of them. And I was kind of specifically searching for a Farfisa organ because I just know they're reliable, beautiful organs. And one just came up not far away and it was like £5. So it was about $10.
And it was wow.
Perfect working
condition. Find me one of those. Wow.
It was really, I had to give the guy more money because I felt bad because it was an old guy who was trying to keep his kids up. Teaches.
Oh, and now that organ's on a record that's doing well.
It's like church organ. He was but I think his kids, you know, just were like, church organ's not for us. And so he was like, I'm just going to get rid of it. It's staying in the garage unused. And so my dad picked it up for me and brought it over to the studio where we were recording. And just those Farfisa organs are great, you know, just, and with that rhythm box built into it that actually started off the song. You know, it still sits proudly in my room. It's what I turn to for everything.
I invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is 2 of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between. And what I do is I play 40 minutes of solid music.